Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Happy Monday, everybody. Today is Monday, August 25th, and it's your girl, Cy Brown, coming at you live from New York City, bringing you your daily dose of urban inspiration, pop culture, music, love, life, politics, and all that good stuff. I actually changed the tagline on the site today, and it says, like, if you go to blogtalkradio.com/Cy Brown and under Life Remix, it just says, rethink everything you know, period. Because that's kind of what the whole show is about. You know, this is our 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34. This is our 35th show. And considering we just started the show in July, we've evolved, we've changed, we've grown. Things are going very, very well. I think so. I've got some great listeners that tune in to me every single day at 12 noon. But, you know, I just want to make sure I'm bringing you the absolute best show. And I think just using a tagline of just rethinking everything you know, period, just says so much about what we stand for and what I believe in and how I think we can all grow personally, professionally, and spiritually. So, I don't know. Let me know what you think. Hit me up in the chat room or feel free to hit me up on MySpace, myspace.com/LifeRemixedRadio. Today we have a great show planned for you, as always. I've got Mr. Curtis Pree joining us, and we're going to talk about the piece that he has running right now on the Daily Voice entitled John McCain is No Maverick. So, you know, I'm going to just go into a little bit of what we do here every single day, and then I'm going to have Curtis join us in a few moments. So if anybody has any questions, comments, hit us up in the chat room or just, you know, call in. He will be taking calls. He's gracious enough, and he is on the West Coast, so it's kind of cool that he's calling in at 9 o'clock in the morning. Just don't forget, This show is available for download through iTunes, so please download us into your iPods. You can take us on the go. And that's it for that. let's get into our daily thought for today. Our daily thought, let me turn to it, because y'all know I do not read it first. Our daily thought for Monday, August, oh, this is a good one. This is a good one, everybody. Our daily thought for Monday, August 25th is, I do all things with excellence. I take action to achieve excellence. I desire to achieve my highest and greatest good. I am a creation of the source of all good, the source of all excellence, and I experience my oneness with all humankind. When I have to make tough decisions, God is always with me, and I act with excellence. In my mind's eye, I see excellence in everyone and in everything. I do not worry. I pray, I align myself with divine wisdom, and I know what to do at the right time. I do not hurry. In due time, I demonstrate excellent results. I think on good things. Thinking excellent thoughts becomes a good habit. I cultivate friendships and relationships with people who expect excellence at all times. I practice excellence at work, at school, at home, at church, and in my community. I receive recognition and awards that show appreciation for the excellence I am and the excellence I demonstrate. I am guided by excellence in all things, great and small. Thank you, God, in me, as me, and so it is. And today's scripture comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. That's kind of good. You know, I think we all can probably do things a little bit better. You know, we all want to do things, well, at least I do. You know, at least I try to. You know, I end up pissing off a lot of people half the time because, you didn't call me back, or I'm waiting for a call. Look, I'm sorry. I try to call everybody back. But, you know, I do think we do have to try to do things in excellence, especially as a black businesswoman, business owner, because people have such shady views on blacks in business. And so it kind of I think we do have to kind of always live according to a standard of excellence. I remember my dad as a young girl told me, oh, you always have to do better. You have to be better. And I was like, why? And he would always tell me the only answer he gave me was because you're black. And I'm like, okay, that's obvious, but why do I always have to get A's? And I remember him punishing me like really, really severely because I got a C one time on my report card. And I think what that did, I mean, I'm grateful now, but what that did is it set the standard in my life that C's are not acceptable. And what happens is you raise your children pretty much, I think, the way you were raised. And so now my children come home and I'm like, that C is so not acceptable. And they're like, whatever. But at least they know deep down inside that C really is not good. And they do work better. I definitely don't have straight A students, but I do have two children who try to always do things in excellence, and it's because it's kind of like that trickle-down theory. Ooh, nice segue into our topic today. But it is kind of like the trickle-down theory where you do things and it just kind of flows on down. But that was a nice segue into our guest today, who is Mr. Curtis Pree. Curtis, are you with us?
I am with you this morning.
How are you today?
I am excellent, as you say. That's your word for the day, excellent. So I am feeling wonderful.
That is our word for today. We have to put that in the chat room. The word for today is excellent. Well, listen, tell my listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then I'll jump into my questions and be nosy.
I am a political strategist residing out of Washington, D.C. I have worked in the arena of politics for quite some time, over about 25 years. I was a member of the Democratic National Committee press operation under Ron Brown when he served as the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. I ran for mayor in Washington, D.C. back in 1994.
Wow.
I've been a lobbyist for the electric companies, the publicly owned electric companies that fight on behalf of the consumer to keep the rates low. Did that for about 6 years. I'm a licensed realtor, actually, in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. As you stated, I'm calling you from California because I'm here doing some political work. And I also write a number of op-ed articles as it relates to politics. And during the course of this presidential election, I've done post-election analysis on various radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so politics is sort of part of my excellent breakfast morning thing, you know?
Well, I'm a political, I wouldn't say a political junkie, but I'm getting pretty close. I love politics because I love to see how they spin things. And as a former publicist, I love to watch how they take things and twist it into something that doesn't exist. And I think that's what really began my affinity with politics. But before we even get into that, the whole political piece of today's show, what is the difference between a realtor and a real estate agent? Because I heard you say realtor, and I don't know the difference, so I'm just asking.
Well, you know, when I think in terms of a realtor, I think in terms of an overall comprehensive professional who provides you with all kinds of areas of expertise. I consult with my clients about their brokers and how to find financing.
Mm-hmm.
When they get their financing, I let them know whether I think it's a good interest rate, and if not, I give them other avenues and just try to make sure they get educated, because for me it's not so much about getting a commission and getting paid as it is to make sure that when they make that big decision about that big purchase item, that they've made a good rational decision and they've had as much information available to make sure they make a good decision. I think in terms of somebody who just kind of looks for property and gets you your property and get out of the deal. But for me as a realtor, I'm your lifelong friend, because when you want to move up or if you want to sell what you're doing, you're going to come back to me because I empowered you with information.
Okay, I had a friend of mine on the show. His name is Carl Agard, and he was on the show like two weeks ago, I believe. And he is big in real estate in New York and Atlanta. And he dropped a lot of knowledge on us that show. So if anybody wants to download that show on iTunes, just look it up in the archives. But he never mentioned realtors. So when you mentioned it, I was like, oh, okay, so then what's the difference? So that was just a little quick teaching moment as an aside to
I do it with passion like I do politics.
Well, you know what, and that's good because I think our passion fuels what we do well. I really believe that. I love, you know, I tell everybody my quote-unquote day job is running a speakers bureau, and that's really what my day job is. But my true passion, the thing that really gets me up and running in the morning is empowering speakers to be better speakers. That's really what I love to do. And because I love to do it, it's effortless. Like, I just, it's just, you know.
It's like drinking water, isn't it?
Yeah. Or making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with, like, extra chunky peanut butter on whole wheat bread, because y'all know I just love peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay, for your daily ritual now. You got to stop that.
Yeah, because the carbs. You know, I'm a lot closer to 40 than I am to 30, and I think I have to go easy on the bread thing. But I don't know. It still tastes yummy going down.
Well, as I said, you only live once, just do it in moderation.
You know what, you're absolutely right. And if my biggest vice is peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and chocolate chip cookies, then oh well. Then oh well. Oh wait, I forgot we still have to do a show about politics. Okay. All right. Now I'm getting back into my political mode. Talk to me. All right. First of all, I want to talk about the piece you did on the Daily Voice. Let's rewind it just a smidgen more. You said you wrote an op-ed piece for the Daily Voice. Can you tell us what an op-ed piece is?
What it is, it's a personal opinion about an issue or a situation that you feel that you can provide some insight to the reader. And it's something that mostly we have current issues that are currently that are out there. So when you're talking about what's going on with this presidential election, there are a lot of issue areas from the Clintons and how they're dealing with Barack Obama till, you know, John McCain and how the media deals with John McCain. And so there are a lot of issues in this election that people are concerned about, as well as the economy that they're not talking about because they're so busy talking about Iraq. You know, we have people who are losing their homes. And so you have op-ed pages on all kinds of issues that bring you insight. And so I thought it was important to bring some insight on to John McCain.
Well, I had a guy on the show, and he dubbed himself the hip-hop Republican. And a lot of the things that he said, he has a blog, the hip-hop Republican. His name was Richard. I can't think of his last name. And I was like, dang, I think I'm a Republican because I listened to all of the stuff he said. And we joked that day saying I could never go and, like, at Thanksgiving dinner or, like, on Sunday dinner and tell my family I'm a Republican. They would, like, say I can't be black anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Because, you know, we're just like, we're all Democrats. You're going to vote. My grandmother taught me from a very young age, whoever's running, no matter what they think, just vote Democrat all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless her. She's 87 years old, and I just love my grandmother so dearly. But what is it about John McCain that people find him to be a maverick and not a typical Republican?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, John McCain has received this image and the word maverick more from the media. And they've done that because in the past, prior to him running for president, first of all, he was someone who didn't take earmarks. And when I'm talking about earmarks, when congressmen are doing legislation, they earmark or they designate money to be spent in their area where they're from, in their congressional district. And that money supports specific programs. And he has been one of the only congressmen who never do that because he believes it's pork and it's a waste. And so over the years, he has had a reputation of somebody who kind of acted out on his own and did his thing, and no matter if the party agreed with him or not. And that was a good thing. However, when he started running for president, he changed up. And he did it for the convenience of trying to win. And so that is one of the reasons why I question his maverick image that he used to have.
Well, you know, just in my own personal studies, and I see, oh, yeah, the whole pork, was it pork barrel or pork belly spending where they make these allocations, so I understand that. But is it that John McCain is now conforming to Republican views? I hate the term flip-flop, but is it that, because there's some things, and I can't think of them off the top of my head, but there's some issues that he had an opinion on, and his opinion has since changed. So for the sake of this argument, I don't know, and I want to say for the record, I don't know if this is one of those specific examples, but it's just for example, let's choose Rudy Giuliani, better choice. Let's not even talk about John McCain at this moment. Rudy Giuliani, the mayor, who the former mayor of my esteemed city, New York City, was pro-choice and marched freely in the gay pride parades, which my mama was taking me to since I was 5 years old because I grew up in Greenwich Village. All of a sudden, he was running for president, and now all of a sudden, he's pro-life. Is that mm-hmm. is John McCain doing some tap dancing like that about certain issues?
Yeah, he's doing a great deal of tap dancing when it comes to a number of issues. One of the issues that he hasn't run away from, and that hit, is his pro-life position. You know, he doesn't support abortion, whether it's incest or rape, or he doesn't care, and so he won't run away from that. But what he's done is he's taken a number of positions that in the past he would never have embraced, and he decided that he wants to get the Christian Coalition's vote, and so he's embraced a number of areas that the Christian Coalition has endorsed. And so as we talk about change, and like you said, flip-flop, you know, sometimes it's okay to change if the majority of the Americans feel that it's something that we should do. But for example, when you talk about offshore drilling of oil, that was something that he was totally against, but because he thought that it would be something that would get him a vote, he's all for it. And my thing is, although we have $4 and some odd cent gas, we have a responsibility to the next generation to make sure that we give them a better environment than we have.
Yeah.
And so instead of us talking about drilling oil where we might have accidents and destroy the ecosystem, that maybe we ought to talk about conservation and how we can carpool and how we can find alternative fuel sources.
Well, you know, I think when I look at some of John McCain's positions, and I do want to get to Senator Barack Obama as well, because I have very strong opinions about him too. I want to – is it that he has to change in order to get the Republican vote, or is he really appealing to independents?
Well, you know, the thing is that when you're running for office for the president, you're dealing with a much larger constituent than his constituent in the state of Arizona. But as you know, when we think in terms of Arizona, they were the last state to even embrace Martin Luther King's birthday being a holiday.
Okay, can you say that a little bit louder and into the mic? You better believe that. And I'm really upset why they have not mentioned that on Morning Joe.
Yeah, so now when you think in terms of John McCain being from Arizona, you know, that's a whole different constituent than the folks in New York City, which is one of my great cities that I love a great deal. And so he, as you know, during the course of this campaign, he went to Memphis during the Martin Luther King celebration, and he apologized to the crowd for being on the wrong side of that issue. Now, see, when you do something like that, that's not a flip-flop. That's a man who's come of age, and it was politically correct to do that.
Right.
And so that's a sensible movement. You know, but when you talk about let's suspend the gas tax in the summertime, you and I both know Congress has never worked fast.
Right.
And so that was something to get him political points as opposed to a reality that he was going to relieve the pocketbooks of the American and decrease, you know, gasoline prices. And so when you do something like that, that's some okey-doke stuff, and we can't fall for the okey-doke.
Oh, you are on the right show, because I say that all the time. I say that all the time on this show. I'm like, y'all, we've been sold the okey-doke, so you are definitely on the right show, because I say that all the time. And I don't want the wool, I want the wool to be pulled from in front of our eyes. I'm so tired of us falling for the okey-doke. Speaking of okey-doke, let's move to Barack Obama. a lot of people, especially people of color, have rallied around Barack Obama. Strictly your opinion, do you think this man is really going to help black people?
Well, you know, I think that Barack Obama being elected is going to be helpful on a number of arenas. I think we have to think in terms of, for our young people, we talk about a role model. Our young people have not had anyone that's been out in the forefront in a power position like this. I mean, you talk about the President of the United States, you can't be any more powerful than that. And I know just from a stance of our young people believing that they can be anything they want to be, his mere election to that, his mere fact that he's the Democratic nominee, the nominee of a major party, is significant in itself. And I believe that that in itself is going to be a change for black folks. Now, when we talk about from an economic standpoint, or we talk about from a social standpoint, we're going to have to make him accountable and put his feet to the fire the same way we do it with any other politician. It just so happened that we have been blessed for once to take our political clout and put it on one of our own. That's something that we've never done before. We've never had this opportunity. And so I think it's a grateful moment, and I think those folk who died, who were persecuted back during the civil rights time with water holes and dogs, you know, the men and women who were hung in the 1800s during slavery, all of those people, every sacrifice that they made is for us to have a day like this. And so, you know, when I think in terms of what it means and what's going to change for us, I think the image of black Americans around the world will change, or has already changed because of his involvement there. But, you know, he's no messiah. And so we've got to make sure that we hold him accountable.
I think not so long ago, we were talking just about images in the media, and I said on the air that I liked the movie Soul Plane, which is just like a greasy movie, and that I never saw Akilah in the Bee. And I got chewed out in my chat room and on the air because I said I like Soul Plane and I had no desire to see Akilah in the Bee. And I think, and I bring that up for all of my listeners that tune in every day, that's kind of how I feel about Barack Obama. And let me kind of explain why. I was interviewed for this piece that aired on the Huffington Post, and in that interview, I said, I'm not going to vote for him just because he's black. Now, as a media person, I should have been more careful because they extracted that and didn't include the content I said before or after it. So part of my dialogue that appeared on the Huffington Post said, well, I'm not going to vote for him just because he's black. And I really felt that way. But now let's fast, and this was taken in like, this was done in like February, I think it is. So now fast forward to August, he's now the Democratic nominee. I still am having a hard time as to why black people feel that he's going to help us all that much. But I feel a lot better because I kind of think the way you do. I think just by virtue of him being the president, it's going to make our young people stand up a little straighter. Am I making sense or am I too far off? Like,
No, you're making a great deal of sense, because what I tell a lot of people is this. Today you have George Bush, and we won't go into George Bush because you don't have but an hour. We need a week for that.
Baby?
But you've got George Bush here. And when corporate America goes to lobby George Bush to do things in effort of their or in the interest of their industry, they bring all their lobbyists. Now, I was a lobbyist for 6 years. And so when they come in the door, there's 50 white guys, maybe one white woman, and probably no blacks.
Right.
And they come and lobby, My thing is, I know that if there's a Barack Obama in that White House, those corporations will first make sure that they have a diverse group of lobbies that will be black, white, Hispanic, and the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that corporate America, we talk about our Fortune 500 companies, at the top of those companies, they will be looking for good new talent. And that talent will be a multifaceted talent, because they know that the whole world is changing and moving in a different direction.
Okay, you know, I
you make a lot of sense.
I am so on point with you on this. Okay, so now that kind of validates how I feel, because I can only say in certain social circles, and Lord knows I'm putting it out on the radio right now, but that I really don't feel he's going to be the great savior of black people. And I'm tired of black people looking for a dang savior. And everybody knows my story. I grew up in the 80s, and Jesse Jackson came by my high school in New York City in 1980. And I still, or was it 85, I still have the autograph that he gave me, and it said, "Dear Saida, push for excellence." So I look at it like, okay, that was nice, but I never, I don't know, and wait, let me also say one thing. I'm a little jaded, so you know, because we've never spoken before, I kind of grew up in, first of all, I grew up with a black mother and a white stepfather, even though I was with my father's black side, I guess the black side, you know, with the Sunday dinners, going to church thing on the weekends and during the summer. And it was in an upper middle class environment. So a lot of things that many people of color experienced, I did not experience. So I only say that so you understand why my views are the way they are for the sake of this conversation. Some things I just don't understand, or why we as people look to somebody like Obama as the Messiah, or Obama's coming out of the sky. The last time we had anybody close to him was with Martin Luther King. Does that mean we've been wandering for like the last 30 or 40 years looking for somebody?
Well, you know, I understand exactly where you're coming from. It's like we have a responsibility to empower our young people by giving them all the resources that are available for them to be the best that they can be. And at home is where that leadership and when they're looking for somebody to believe in, to be a role model, it should start at home. And then it can branch out into the community, to the teacher and the policeman and the fireman. These are people they see and touch every day that are real. The Obama folk are on television. And
exactly.
So a lot of that is like that's removed from them. Like you said, Jesse came in, someone excellent, and, you know, down with dope, up with hope and all that good stuff. And it feels good and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, we have to be responsible for our own future.
And that's the thing that pisses me off, because I look at it this way. My mother is going to meet Barack Obama tomorrow, and we're like, she doesn't even know all the details, I guess for security purposes, but she called me, she's like, "Saida, I'm going to meet Barack, there's about 30 or 40 of us, what should I wear?" And I said, "Wear jeans and a white button-up shirt and a pair of loafers. That's what you taught me is always safe." And she's like, "Hey, yeah, you're right." So, like, I'm very behind Obama just because I'm not feeling McCain. But just to speak to our role models, we can put all our hope in Martin Luther King, Barack Obama, but they're not in my hood. And that's there's something else I want to speak. That's why I stopped attending a mega church. Because I said, if God forbid somebody in my family ever die or pass away or transition or whatever you call it, is that pastor going to be there to console us? Like, I think we, just as a people, look up to these people and give them so much power and presence in our lives that they may not so rightly deserve.
Now, I mean, I think you're very right, and that was the one thing that, like, when I'm involved and I love politics, but when I look at politics, I look at politics on a community basis, because
yes.
Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House who passed away,
yes.
Bless his soul, he
yes.
wrote a book that all politics is local.
Yes.
And that is critical for us to get into to involve our young people on the local level, at the school board level, at the city
yes.
council level, even at the ANC level, so that, you know, when you have an issue about, you know, trash in your neighborhood and in the alley, you know, you can be empowered to be proactive and deal with that.
Yes.
You know, because
yes.
that's where the difference is going to be made, and then it branches out and goes into the greater community. And so as we talk about politics and we talk about our word of the day is excellence, I also, when I think of politics and policy, I think of the word of enlightenment, because it's all about informing and getting folks involved and educated. And like you said, these Generation Xers, we want them to be more politically informed and involved.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I love Thomas P. Tip O'Neill. I learned about him probably in like the seventh grade or sixth grade. And, you know, it's just amazing how big ups to all the teachers that listen, because you do have a big influence over young people's lives. Because a teacher, my seventh grade teacher was actually our city councilman in my little town that I grew up in during some of the years I lived with my dad in Jersey. And because mm-hmm. he was a city councilman, he taught our class a lot about student government. And I got to share something, but you all promise you can't tell anybody. I was actually running for like my, it was either seventh grade or eighth grade, you know, middle school. I was running for my class senator, and my name before I got married was Saida Page. And so my homeroom teacher, Mr. Shoup, came up with my campaign slogan: for the next page in history, vote for Saida.
I know that's right. See, that's what I'm talking about. Okay.
And I became our class senator, but I just, you know, I go off on these little tangents on the show, so just please forgive me. But the teacher made the difference, and he's the one that introduced me to Tip O'Neill. But that is such a profound statement, that politics is local. All of these people that are rallying behind Barack, and maybe I sound very cynical on today's show, but it gets really under my skin. Everybody's running to Washington, D.C. You cannot get a hotel room in Washington, D.C. right now because everybody's going to the inauguration, but you can't get them to go to a local school board meeting.
No, let me talk you a little bit better, because I'm about a week or two older than you are. And you talk about a school board meeting. I remember we used to have the Parent Teacher Association meeting, where the parents would come in and they would get a progress report on the student, and then, you know, they would dress that student down or dress that student up depending on what they needed at the time.
Yeah.
But the parent was always there and involved at the school, because it's one of those things where to deal with our young people and get them involved and get them motivated requires a community. When they talk about it takes a village to raise a child, you know, the parents have to reinforce what the teachers are teaching at school, and the teachers, you know, have to spend so much time disciplining kids at
yeah.
home. And we've also got to give our kids some love. We've got a lot of kids that are abused out here,
yeah.
and they bring that abusiveness to class, and then they become acting it out and disruptive. And so we've got some issues, but as a village, we can get through it, but we've got to be working together.
I totally agree, and maybe you can write it. Maybe you know, write an op-ed piece on that, on how everybody is traveling far and wide to see Barack Obama, but they won't travel to, or they won't vote in local city council meetings, or they won't go to PTA. I have two children. One is 19. He just graduated from high school and is starting college, and my other son, Miles, is 14, and I remember attending Miles's PTA meetings when we moved back to New York from Atlanta, well, right outside of New York, a small town in New Jersey, and I went to the very first PTA meeting of the year. You know, you go, shake hands, kiss babies, smooches, I'm Miles's mommy. The meeting was in Spanish. I was utterly appalled. I said, hello, I don't speak Spanish. And you know what I was told? Well, we don't have people here that ask for English. Everybody asks for all of the information in Spanish. I was fire. I can't even begin to tell you how angry I was. But not even angry at them. I was angry at us. Where are all the other parents, not even black, white, purple, Chinese, gray, beige, and turquoise, that speak English?
I'm understanding what you're saying. Like you say, everybody's, they're traveling. This is interesting as you talk about an op-ed piece to write. You talk about everybody's traveling far and wide to see a star, basically,
yes.
when they go out here to see Obama.
Yes.
And the sad part is they don't realize the real star is at home. It's their
yeah.
child who they
yeah.
should be molding, because as we talk about enlightenment and we talk about excellence, when those young people, when they're going deep inside to bring out the best that they have to offer us, Lord knows what kind of human being you're going to create, but it's going to be a dynamic person.
Yep. I'm blessed, and I didn't realize it until I got older how fortunate I really, really am. And I have to say, I now have a dishwasher, and I am always complaining because there's always stuff in the dishwasher. I'm like, can't you kids just unload the dishwasher? And I chuckle, and I say this in the most in a very humble way. I remember my mother, when I was in like third or fourth grade, I was about 8 or 9, the biggest thing my mother would yell at me about was unloading the dishwasher. So now here I am having the exact same complaint. Like, you know, and the biggest issue in my house is that you don't want to unload the dishwasher, and that my oldest son breaks curfew because he thinks because he graduated high school he's grown. But those problems are so small compared to the real issues that are going on in real neighborhoods across the country. I don't know about you or the people that you know, but I know more dang people right now with MBAs that cannot get a job. What can Barack do to help them? And when I, and you know, me and my girlfriends go out or whatever, I'm always the lone person. Maybe I'm the maverick because I'm like, do y'all really think voting for this man is going to get you a job? And they really think that he will, and I'm not trying to be the wet blanket on anybody. But when you understand politics, there are so many layers. And even if he does implement change that can get you employed, it's not going to happen in the next year or two. Am I wrong, since you're a political strategist and you know better than I?
Well, the thing is that, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because I tell a lot of people, what we have to understand is as Barack Obama talks about change, the one thing that I've watched him do, and that is mature over the past 8 months,
yes,
as opposed to speak about change for change's sake. When he made Joe Biden his running mate this weekend, and Joe Biden is from the old school. He's been out
yes.
there a very long time. He's
yes.
very well respected. I thought what that did was that demonstrated to me that while Barack understands we're in America, America is only going to be allowing so much change at one time.
The voters
have stated that they're ready to embrace a black president. But other than that, we're going to have to move a little slower. And I think with him selecting Joe Biden, it demonstrates that he hears that message that there's only going to be so much change. And so Joe Biden, being from the old school, being a veteran, can help
yes.
him maneuver the minefield. But if anybody is thinking that because he's elected that, you know, we're going to all be free and have a six-figure job, you got another thing coming, I got a couple bridges to sell you.
Well, you know something? I at first thought he was going to reach out to Bill Richardson, just, you know, just who I thought he was going to pick. But then when he picked Joe Biden, I said, this dude is so shrewd. And I hope people are listening and don't think I'm like a batterer of Barack Obama. But, you know, I just look, and he is just as, I don't want to say sneaky, but he's just as shrewd as the Clintons. You cannot go into politics. And I stand to be corrected, since you're in that arena. If I say something off, correct me, my show or not, pull out that red pen. But everybody was saying, you know, everybody was saying, oh, all of these things about the Clintons. And I'm like, Barack Obama does a six in one hand, half dozen in the other equation. Because you might not think he's as shrewd or slick Willie or whatever they used to call Clinton, but to me, I think he's the same, because you have to have alliances, you have to have strategic partners, you have to have
right.
all of these things to successfully do whatever the task at hand is. So the only distinction that I thought, and I was an avid Hillary Clinton supporter from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I was all the way for the Clintons. That girl power thing, she can do it, she's experienced, and I always felt from day one that Obama was above a rock star. And I may eat my words at some point, but for the sake of today, August 25th, this is my opinion. But now, when I look at all of these things, do people honestly think he can get into office and not build the same alliances that the Clintons had, build up strategic partners that the Clinton had? Everything in life is a favor for a favor. I don't get where all of this, it is about him, because it's still politics. Am I right or wrong about that issue?
Oh no, you're absolutely right. As you say,
you can come
back
anytime because you keep agreeing with me.
Well, you know, when you make sense, you know, there's nothing for me to do but be quiet, because at the end of the day, when you look at when you want to gain access to power, you cannot do that. You will not do that in a negative way, because if that happens, then there's a barrier that's not going to allow you in.
Right.
It's just like a negative and a positive is a negative.
Right.
It's, at the end of the day, in order for him to get access and be a part of the club, he has to certainly let us know that he's not going to disenfranchise all the people already here.
Exactly.
So, you know, like you said, he's a very shrewd politician, and I think I've watched him moving. And like you said, you were with Hillary, and they got Bill Richardson. America's not they weren't ready for an African-American and a Latino on the ticket. I don't think they were ready for an African-American and a woman. And I don't think America doesn't change that quickly.
Well,
and
you
so,
know something. Oh, I'm sorry. Continue. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, that's my bottom line, is that, you know, while Barack talks about change, it's an incremental change. And we understand, and we should understand, that, you know, we first of all, before we can do all this changing, we've got to come together on a comprehensive approach that includes everybody in the conversation.
Well, absolutely. And here's why I started thinking, I want to speak on two things. I want to speak, number one, on change, but I also want to speak on something else about Hillary Clinton. What really took me away from Hillary Clinton was when I saw her drinking shots in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I saw that, my mama raised me. I was a party promoter and a publicist, and so I knew how to have a good time and cut a rug, so to speak. But one mm-hmm. thing I never did is I never sat at a bar or drank at a bar. To me, that was like the lowest thing a woman could do. Now, I would go out and drink. I'm drinking. We're having a ball. Or I would go out to restaurants, but I just couldn't bring, and I'm still the same way. I can't bring myself to stand at a bar and just drink. For whatever reason. And when I saw her standing at a bar drinking shots, I just said, it was like for me the shot that rang around the world. I said, not only is the world leaders not really that accepting of a woman, because a woman is still a second-class citizen in many countries, but for her to be drinking shots at a bar, that just really, really threw me off. So that's when Hillary Clinton lost me. But I want to speak very quickly to your situation of change. This morning on Morning Joe, and I watch Morning Joe on MSNBC every single morning, he's a Republican, and Mika Brzezinski is a Democrat, but they all got money. So however you want to slice it or dice it. But this is what he said this morning. He said, over the next 10 years, America is going to lose. Now, this is coming from a Republican, and he said it doesn't matter who gets in office, and this is the reason that he gave. China is moving so much more quickly than America, that their innovation, that they're graduating engineers, they're doing all of these things that they're just moving at lightning speed. So part two to that is I was reading the magazine Fast Company, which is like kind of like a business or entrepreneurs magazine, and there's a woman who is now running the D.C. school system. I think her last name is Ree. She's only 38 years old. She, too, is saying that in other countries, things are moving a lot more quickly than they're moving in America. Do you think Barack Obama can do anything to implement change just with how quickly or how stagnant America is in the global sense? And I know it's sounding a little ambiguous, but let's look at it from the way we're educating our people from Ree's point of view, and then in business, from what Joe Scarborough was talking about as well, do you think we can catch up?
Well, you know, we don't have a choice but to become much more innovative. And I think both Joe and Mitch Wee, who I have had the pleasure of meeting over in Washington, D.C.
Really?
Yeah, she's implementing a new program, you know, that are paying the kids for school, but that's a whole other topic. I think as president, a Barack Obama would recognize when we talk about our young people and their future, I think education is the key. Past generations have always believed that. From the time that, you know, slaves were freed until today, we recognize that when we look around our community, the most affluent people are those who have gone to college because it allows them a greater access and ability to jobs that are at the higher end on the executive level. It also allows them to be entrepreneurs because that's the key. Entrepreneurship is critical. We've got to invest in tax cuts to fuel our small businesses so that we can we've got to have a burst of entrepreneurship. I mean, when you look at China focused their athletes on winning gold, not winning medals, but winning gold. And so when you look at the Olympics, America won the most medals, but China won the gold. And that's where they get their return on that gold. And so from a standpoint of business and from a standpoint of education, we have got to invest in our kids, and we've got to make sure that everybody understands it's a moral responsibility that every young kid has access to a quality education. We've got to get our kids educated. We've got to get those minds moving. And somehow we've got to turn off those TVs and get rid of all of those internet shows. And these kids are becoming victims on the internet for prayers and pedophiles. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you look at the kids that go home and they sit down and they start playing games. I was in my neighborhood one day, and I watched the playground several weeks. And I said, I never saw any kids in the playground like we used to swing and play. I said, but these kids go home and get on the Atari, and they sit there. And so we've got to give them something else to do.
Yeah.
And we have to become parents because what it is that they're allowing these games to babysit our children.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I do totally agree with that. And let me interject. My mother had my sister when I was 19 years old. She was like, you know, an older mother, and it was very unexpected. So my sister is 1 year younger than my son.
Okay.
My mother moved to the Midwest to raise my sister. They bought a house. And my husband and I stayed in North Jersey. Actually, at the time, we were in Jersey City, which is right outside of Manhattan. I was commuting into my business in New York, blah, 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 blah. My son and my sister are two totally distinctly different people. We were just at my mom's house this month in August. My mother has one TV in the house. It is probably 13 inches and in the kitchen. And my sister just got a computer Christmas, and that was after me saying, okay, Mom, you guys need to have cable because of the current political climate, and you need this. She needs a computer, Mom. Well, she can go to the library. Do you know my sister goes to the library? And this is not to big up my sister, but it's to detail the stark contrast. I'm going to get into my children in a minute. I remember when she was growing, she talked about the rabbits and the trees, and I laughed. I'm like, what? And I told you, my mom raised me in Greenwich Village in New York City. Like, if I was old enough, she probably would have taken me into Studio 54. Really, you know, just eccentric Greenwich Village life of, you know, a celebrity elite my parents were. But now they're older and have calmed down. My son, thank God they're not into, like, so much of the videos and stuff like that. And I think it's because I worked in hip-hop and PR for so long that they understand that that's not real. But the video games, the music that I hear coming out of their room, I'm like, turn that rap music off. And they're looking at me like, are you serious? Because I promoted it for so long. And that speaks directly to China winning more gold medals.
Mm-hmm.
My mother raised my sister with such core values, and I was a lot looser. I was a younger parent, urban parent, like all of these different things. And it's sad because my son, who just turned 19 and graduated in June, is still not prepared to go to college. And this is my own kid I'm talking about. And this is after he spent K through 3 in Catholic school. Then we put him in private school. Then we put him in charter school. And then we finally went to public. I said, my God, when he has to put this on his college application, they're going to think something's wrong with him because he's been in so many schools. It's because we were trying to find a school that can educate him. And finally, by freshman year, we had just given up. We're like, you know what, nothing's going to work, because the schools that we really thought could educate him were like $10,000-$15,000 a year. It's really, really sad where we're going as a society as far as our lack of investment in our young people. Do you have any reason why that may be the case?
Well, I just think what has happened is that we've just taken our eye off the ball. You know, a lot of the parents are single parents, and because of, you know, just the state of the world, we don't have that village anymore. You don't have the extended family in the community anymore. You know, the kids are not being disciplined anymore. You have 12-year-old kids that talk to their parents, you know, like they're 30 years old and have no respect for them. And
yeah.
So, you know, we need an entire new birth in the country. On a whole lot of fronts, as you talk about business and entrepreneurship, you know, as we talk about the educational system, you know, our young people, you know, they need to see examples of, you know, when we talk about, like we're talking about the school superintendent in Washington, D.C., you know, she's looking at paying kids to go to school.
That's crazy.
That's a crazy thing. But my thing is that there needs to be a comprehensive approach. Everybody has an idea of how to fix things, and I think if we can all listen to one another, you know, I think that we can come up with a solution. We are in a capitalist society, and so
yes.
Unfortunately, you know, unlike China, you know, China is not it's a communist country.
Right.
The government owns everything, and so, you know, when you have that, and it's a monolithic kind of
yes.
country. You know, they don't. You know, America is challenged because we have a lot of ethnic groups and we have a lot of languages. But it's a
and
wonderful
country. And we let everything
country.
Go. Everything is yes. loosey-goosey in America, my opinion. Everything goes.
Well, you know, we stop cracking the whip where at home the way it should be cracked. You know, you got kids calling 911 telling my mother hollering at me.
Please.
You know,
please.
Come on, is that real? And so, you know, we gotta come back to the commitment, you know, that our young people matter, and that we have to invest in the future, invest in our schools. We have to make sure that our teachers are continuing to grow and they're retesting themselves so that they're current. And we also got to give them a hand in that school classroom because, you know, they're spending so much time disciplining kids that they can't educate the kids.
Yeah, I agree. I have to say that, you know, I've been very, very involved with my children in school, largely in part because I've been self-employed for so many years, so I had the freedom and flexibility to take off whenever something was happening in school. But I don't know the lack of parental involvement. Does it come from because they're tired, because they're single? Like, what happened?
Well, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons, but, you know, the main thing is, you know, we stop really articulating the entrepreneur spirit. You know, everybody wants to go and just get a job, and then they can't make ends meet. And you and I both know, as an entrepreneur, not only do you feel good about what you're doing, it's nothing like feeling good about what you're doing, having fun doing it, and getting paid for doing it.
Well, you know what? Let me speak to that, because I remember the school that my mother had me in as a child encouraged free thinking and just creative thinking. I mean, to teach us about the ecosystem in the rain, they had to stand out in the rain, and my father had a fit because, oh, that, you know, that's not the way, whatever it was, whatever their argument was. But that helped me so much. And maybe 2 weeks ago at Sunday dinner, and I actually said this on the air, my father said, and he is a very, he's a supervisor of an x-ray department at a hospital here in North Jersey. He is very much, you go to work, you put in your time, you don't be late, don't, you know, use their phone, you know, just do the right thing and you'll be okay. He actually said at Sunday dinner, the only way to succeed in America right now is to have your own business. I thought I was going to fall out of the chair Because yeah, I've been self-employed, maybe I can get it.
Well, no, I mean, he's absolutely right. And so that's one of the reasons why I believe Barack Obama is a businessman with savvy.
Yes.
Ultimately, I believe that, as he talks about change and as we talk about, John McCain and being a maverick and, bringing this all home, I think that when you look at what has happened in the oil industry with our gas prices and what's going on in our economy, we're losing jobs overseas, and a lot of it is just because we're not creating quality. We have to create quality in our people and in our product so that people will buy our product.
Right.
And so it's important that we invest in our future and our young people in the education system. It's important that as we talk about this election and young people being enlightened and involved, they understand that, politics is local and it's your community that counts first, because where you live, you want it to prosper, so you have to plant a seed for it to grow. And all
yeah.
of those things are very, it's critical. But I think that our best days are ahead of us, and I think that we have some positive things to look forward to. When we compare ourselves to China, as I said, it's a communist country. They have they spent $40 billion on the Olympics.
Right.
And that was effortless. They didn't have they didn't have a problem. They stopped farmers from watering their rice fields and channeled that water to Beijing in order to create a lake. But when you're a totalitarian kind of government, you can do those kind of
right,
things.
So we
live in a democracy, and so even with our shortcomings, I think this is a great place to be. I think this is a great political time, and I'm just glad to be here, and I want to live to see this.
Well, I just want to say I am so honored to have had you on the show today, and I do hope that you come back to join us again during this political season, because I mean it's just been absolutely wonderful, and not just because you agree with everything that I said.
Well, I feel privileged that you've invited me, and I'd be more than welcome to come back whenever you give me an invitation.
I just think you're smart. Wait, I was going to say articulate, but I had to be careful with that one.
Yeah, you better be careful with that one. I might have to have you brought up on charges for being racist.
I know, right? You know what? We have so much fun here on the show, and I just want to say thank you with all of my heart, because it's been an absolute pleasure. And to all of my listeners, we had a very quiet chat room today. I don't know, is everybody on vacation? I'm going to bring you back in September, because usually we have a couple callers and a lot more activity in the chat room. But it's all good. So I would love to have you come back, especially maybe even after the Democratic National, maybe after both of them, and we can weigh in on that. So just thank you so much to all of you listeners. Don't forget, you can download today's show on iTunes. Hit me up on MySpace, myspace.com/liferemixradio. I love you for listening, and don't forget that the light of God surrounds us, the love of God enfolds us, the power of God protects us, the presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is, and wherever you are, God is. Make today a great day and have an amazing week. Thanks so much for joining us today. Bye, everybody.